If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. In today's episode, you'll hear a closer look followed by a podcast-exclusive late-night chat segment with our writers Allie Hord and Mike Scollins. But first, here's Seth.
This week has been a very consequential week in the Trump presidency. Today, he met with the president of China after reshuffling his National Security Council and pushing a new infrastructure plan. Meanwhile, Senate Republicans voted today to rewrite the rules to confirm Trump's Supreme Court nominee. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Because Trump doesn't have the firmest grasp on policy, it's difficult to know at any moment what he actually believes and what he actually wants to do. But on Tuesday, he at least made one definitive statement about something he doesn't want to do.
I'm not, and I don't want to be, the president of the world.
And it's weird. But it's a relief just to hear Trump say, I don't want to be president of the world. That's how low our standards are right now. A month ago, if he had said that, my response would have been, nobody asked you to be president of the world. But now he says that, and my reaction is, that's a reasonable thing to say. You are making progress. You are growing up in front of our very eyes. But whether Trump likes it or not, his decisions do affect the rest of the world, especially when it comes to national security. And yesterday, we got some news about who will and who won't be making national security decisions in the White House going forward.
Steve Bannon, President Trump's chief strategist, former Breitbart executive, has been removed from the National Security Council.
That's right. Steve Bannon has been removed from the National Security Council, I'm guessing by someone in a hazmat suit. Oh, where should I put this? So why was Bannon demoted? Apparently, Trump has been bothered by the public perception that Bannon is actually the one in charge. According to the New York Times, the president had quietly expressed annoyance over the credit Bannon had received for setting the agenda. And Trump was not pleased by the President Bannon puppet master theme promoted by magazines, late-night talk shows, and Twitter. And, oh, my God, Donald, I am so sorry. I never would have called Steve Bannon the president if I knew it hurt your feelings so much. And this is terrible timing, but I guess I shouldn't have commissioned that official presidential portrait of Steve Bannon. And I certainly shouldn't have asked for this photo to be mocked up of Bannon sitting at the desk in the Oval Office while you play with blocks and pretend to build your wall. I'm so sorry. Now, apparently, Bannon has also clashed with the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who has taken on an ever-expanding role in the White House that now includes foreign policy. He served as the point person on Trump's meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping at Mar-a-Lago today. According to the New York Times, China's courtship of Kushner reflects a Chinese comfort with dynastic links. Xi is himself a princeling, and Kushner is also somebody they see as a princeling, whereas Eric and Donald Jr. are seen as duncelings.
I want to meet the Chinese president.
But think about how crazy this is. Kushner's qualification is he is married to the president's daughter. Can you imagine if a year ago the president of China visited the U.S. and had to have a meeting with Malia Obama's prom date? Now, going into the meeting today, we knew very little about how Trump would actually deal with the Chinese president. In fact, all we really knew were two things. One, that he thinks China is ripping us off. And two, that during the campaign, he had a very specific plan for how he would welcome his Chinese counterpart.
He's coming over. He's getting a big dinner free at the White House, addressing the UN. If you were president, would you throw him a big dinner?
I would not be throwing him a dinner. We've had this conversation. I'd get him a McDonald's hamburger, and I'd say, we got to get down to work.
So you would be confrontational with the Chinese? You're saying, look, I'm not giving you a dinner.
Excuse me.
Here's a Big Mac? I mean, really? Is that what you're going to do?
I would give him I'd give him a double-sized Big Mac.
Yeah. And then I'd be like, here's your Big Mac, small fry. And then he'd be all, hey, I'm not a small fry. And I'd be all, no, you're an onion ring. Because you stink.
So the stakes for Trump's meeting with the Chinese president could not be higher. With that backdrop, Trump, of course, found time today to talk yet again to his favorite TV show, Fox and Friends. And he didn't really inspire much confidence.
You mentioned the Chinese president. What should we anticipate today with that, sir?
Well, it's going to be very interesting. Nobody really knows.
That's right. Nobody really knows. In fact, I can't wait to hear how the meeting went when the president gets back. But last one. That was my last one, sir. But while Trump deals with foreign leaders, he's also trying to move on to the next item on his domestic agenda, infrastructure. At a meeting of CEOs on Tuesday, he criticized the regulatory process required for building things, using New York as an example, but then quickly transitioned to complaining that nobody talks about dams.
Getting a building approved in New York is a horrible, horrible thing, and that's nothing compared to when you get into the highways and the dams. They don't even talk about dams anymore.
They don't talk about dams anymore. Which is a shame, since I'm pretty sure that thing on your head could build one. Also, when was everyone talking about dams? When I met your grandfather, all anyone was doing was talking about dams. The hot dance at the time was the Hoover Shuffle, and for my sweet 16, we had a piñata shaped like the Grand Coulee filled with sweets. We were damn crazy! Now, because infrastructure is supposed to be Trump's next big push, his team set up an interview with the New York Times that was published last night that was supposed to focus specifically on infrastructure. And you can tell the White House was serious about trying to stay on topic because, according to the Times, at least 6 White House aides were sitting in. 6! This president rolls deep.
I believe you know my posse. This is Little Whitey. And so is this guy. And they all answered a Little Whitey.
And you can see why Trump needed babysitters in this interview, because he very frequently went off the rails. Like when Trump was asked what he would like to spend the infrastructure money on, and Trump said, on roads, on bridges, on many different things. And it's also going to be, we have to refurbish to a large extent. You know, we can build new highways, which are much more expensive, and sometimes they're the highways to hell.
And we're going to fix them very quickly. In fact, there will be no stop signs, speed limit, no one's going to slow me down. Like a wheel, going to spin it. Nobody's gonna mess me around. Hey, Satan, paid my dues, playing in a rock band. Hey, mama, look at me. I'm on my way to the promised land. I'm on the highway to hell. And I don't mind saying I can do it because I've got the biggest balls of them all.
So Trump is trying to make a big infrastructure push, but overshadowing that today was a historic showdown in the Senate over Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch. Basically, Republicans rewrote the rules of the Senate, rules they say they like, to fill a stolen Supreme Court seat. You might remember that Republicans stole that seat from President Obama, who nominated Merrick Garland. In fact, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was asked about Republicans' treatment of Garland and chuckled his way through the entire interview.
Why not put him up for a vote?
Really?
Well, I mean, why
really?
Isn't that a... I mean, I'm just asking. That is a... Look, any senator can have a rationale. We're about to go on a situation where there's going to be this extra level of filibuster. And let me ask you, what was wrong with allowing Merrick Garland to have an up or down vote? Are you prepared to pass a resolution that says, in election years, any Supreme Court vacancy and have it to be the sense of a Senate resolution that say, why not put Merrick Garland on the floor? And if the rationale is, you know what, too close to an election, then vote no.
How stoned is Mitch McConnell? Merrick Garland, that's a funny name. So Trump's in over his head with the Chinese president. His infrastructure plan is incoherent, and his party had to destroy the rules of the Senate just to get his Supreme Court nominee through. It might be better for everyone if he just went back to playing with his blocks. This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Hi, I'm Allie Horde, and I am a writer here at Late Night with Seth Meyers.
And I'm Mike Scollins, and I'm a writer at Late Night with Seth Meyers.
and this is Late Night Chats with Ali and Mike.
Late Night Chats. Hey, Ali.
Yes.
How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. It's funny that we're doing this together because last week you and I brought a sketch to read where Mike and Ali hosted a podcast.
Yes, and Seth was our guest.
And it did not get greenlit.
Yeah, so but maybe this is the consolation prize. They let us do this podcast.
Just do it for real instead.
Seth's going to listen to this and determine if the sketch is viable.
Cool. So why don't you explain a little bit about what we do at the show?
Okay. Well, as far as writers go, we Mike gets in very early. Mike gets in, I think, at 6:30 in the morning.
Around 6:30. I am usually, sometimes the first, definitely the second person to show up.
Yeah.
But it's because I work better in the morning than I do in the afternoon.
Yeah, I'm more of a morning person, too. After 10 o'clock, I'm not funny. So, yeah, so the rest of us get in between 8:30 and 9:30. And we get setups about all the topical news stories of the day, starting the night before and then about four or five more times throughout the day. And it's our job to just sit there like monkeys on typewriters and just, you know, write Shakespeare.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Do your friends and family say it must be so easy with Trump as president to do this job?
Everyone in my life has said that to me, yes.
What do you say to them?
I say, make it easy to be a woman in this country or to write at my job. The answer is no to both. I mean, if you want to be lazy and just like lean on the fact that he's orange and like an idiot and uses, you know, Trumpisms and you can like flower your joke punchline with that. But if you actually want to try to be original and just the volume of Trump setups we get a day, it's exhausting. It's like soul crushing. and I often wonder, I was like, would it feel soul crushing if Hillary won? And I'd be like, I'm so done talking about this woman.
I feel like no, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The headlines would be a lot different. I feel it would be like more B stories. B stories, for those of you listening, are like, you know, an Idaho man won the lottery six times and died, you know.
Or a man in Florida did something.
Usually
terrible.
A man in Florida.
Yeah.
What about you? Do your family ask you all the same things about Trump?
Yeah. And I think I agree with them in the sense that, like, there's always news.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is always something to be talking about. I think it's just, like, finding a new angle is always tough. And also there are some stories where it's, like, you want to be a little more pointed and make a greater point than, like, his hands are small or his hair is bad, which is, like,
yeah.
Both true. Both wells that I go to pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. But also there's like those stories where it's like, ah, oh, we're gonna have to do better than that because this is like a tragedy what's happening right now.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing is some of the setups are like President Trump's poorly thought out military operation killed 100 civilians. And I'm like, and his hands are small? But I also find myself, sometimes I have to like rewrite a punchline because I almost have to do a first pass where just I'm angry and my punchlines come out as a very mm-hmm. angry person. And I have to go back and be like, oh, no, this needs to be funny, not angry.
Round one is just like cathartic. And then round two is the ones that are maybe going to make it to rehearsal.
Yeah. Yeah. For those of you listening at home, we voted for Hillary. I didn't know if you picked up on that.
You did. You're like, Ellie and I have never had this conversation before.
What people might not know is that Mike and I used to work at the same company, but in different cities.
We did. I worked at Funny or Die New York.
And I worked at Funny or Die Los Angeles for a couple years before we both ended up here.
We didn't overlap a ton.
We did not, no.
I remember when there was that Live Free or Die mm-hmm. thing, we worked together a little bit. But that's when I was just freelancing at Funny or Die. And then I think when I was there as a staff writer, you were gone? Or maybe you were doing Gary Sanchez stuff?
I went off and like was contracting on my own, but I came back to produce the movies, their comedy movies, I, Steve, and then the Johnny Depp Trump one.
Yeah.
Which we made this
it's
movie
good.
With Johnny Depp playing Trump called, it was The Art of the Deal, and we interpreted it as like a found tape from the 80s. It was like a TV special, and we really thought we were putting the nail in the coffin on Trump's campaign. And Trump ended up hearing about it and was like flattered because he heard Johnny Depp was playing him. And we're like, oh, you missed the point. He was in like 4 hours of prosthetics to make you look heinous.
Have you heard if he's seen it or not?
I'm sure he has not. I think someone just told him Johnny Depp played him. And so he was flattered and didn't sue us.
Part of me is like, oh, no, anytime he thinks he's going to be talked about, he'll watch it.
It's
like he watches
true.
SNL plenty.
He seems to be hate watching stuff less. Like he's on Fox and Friends now. He used to watch SNL all the time. But he seems to be just watching favorable shows now.
I wonder if he's doing it less or they're finally like, you cannot at 11:35 on a Saturday night tweet about the cold open of Saturday Night
Live. So insane. I wonder what's going to happen like with this sort of job. Like if a nuclear war starts with North Korea. Like what are our setups going to be? It's already insane with like what's going on in like Syria. It's just sort of like, I mean, I guess we can cover that stuff in a closer look because that's just like deeper political stuff. But yeah, it's so to answer our family's question, no, it's pretty bleak.
Tell me about Funny or Die. How did you get that job?
Nepotism. I was working in LA at a development company. And I had produced a decent amount for reality TV. And I ran into Jake Szymanski, who was the first director hired from Adam McKay and Will Ferrell on Funny or Die. And I ran into him at a reunion because we went to college together. And he was telling me about his job. And I just remember being like, wow, that sounds like the best job in the world. You know, because this was on the forefront of people uploading comedy videos. This was, I want to say it was before YouTube, maybe. Or just after YouTube, 2007.
Wait, was this like Pearl the Landlord era?
Yeah. This
Oof,
is
that was a good time to be a Funny or Die.
Exactly.
Like not remotely saturated.
No ads. Like it was just, it was awesome. So he was like, oh, you should send me a Facebook message and like I'll let you know if positions ever open up. And I wanted to quit my job. So I like Facebook messaged him. And I think the next week I went in and he got me an interview and I just started working there the next Monday.
What were you doing prior? Was it a non-comedy job?
It was like TV development, but I was doing UCB on the side and I was on a sketch team, which you did as well.
Yep. Also on a sketch team at the UCB New York Theater. And then how long were you at Funny or Die?
I was at Funny or Die 4 years.
Okay.
It was a long time.
Yeah. I think just when I was starting full time is when you were.
How long were you at Funny or Die?
I think a year and a half. But in the New York office.
Right.
Yeah.
We should probably stop talking about Funny or Die and talk about Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Well, it did. I mean, that was the last job I had before coming here.
Yeah.
How long have you been here now?
I have been here 10 months.
Okay.
Because I started in June of last year. And
yeah.
You started in January of last year?
I think February.
February.
Yeah.
So.
So not that much earlier than you.
But it feels like we've been here forever.
Yeah. It's when it's a daily show, you get acclimated quickly.
Yes, yeah. It's a pretty steep learning curve. But it's been interesting. Like, I'd never worked on anything that was remotely, like, daily before.
Yeah. I think that if anything, it's taught me to be, like, a little bit less precious because there's, like, always a new show the next day. Like, I'll have a day. I mean, it's nice because it works both ways. Like, if I have a shitty monologue day, it's like, all right, well, there's 3 more days left in the week to like prove yourself. Or conversely, like if I have a great monologue day, it's like, all right, well, what do you have for me tomorrow?
What's a great monologue day?
You know, I just like writing the whole thing. but like the successes are short and the failures are short,
absolutely,
which is like good and bad.
I think like that was a big lesson for me as a comedy writer, just picking yourself up and just like, okay, tomorrow is another day, you know?
Yeah, like there's not like time to have a pity party really if your sketch gets cut.
But and what a valuable lesson just like in life about anything you do.
totally.
Get over it. There's going to be another opportunity. I'm like still in shock. I thought this the first day and I still think this to myself quietly. I was like, oh my God, we're writing a show in a day. Like it's just insane. But we have like an incredible staff here and everyone's such a professional and has been doing this forever. So
I'm going through our list and here's a good one. What is the easiest part of the job and what is the hardest part of the job?
The easiest part of the job is eating all the free cake we have.
We do have cake
we
day.
We constantly have free cake, which is a great perk. The hardest part of the job, I think the hardest part of the job for me is just the mental fry by like Thursday at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. when you know you're about to hit the weekend and like you still have to turn in one more page of monologue jokes.
Yeah. I think that's why I know it's why I always like show up early to work, because like by 6 o'clock I'm like, I'm kind of beat right now.
Yeah.
Like the idea of like starting a sketch or something, which is like you do it because there's a sketch read the next day or something, and I'm gonna go do that right now.
Yeah. I think about like
I just get like fried.
Alex Bays and Mike Shoemaker and Seth, you know, they've been working together for a decade. And I just think like, oh my God, how many topical jokes have these three men written? Just
oh man. We submit like 6 pages of jokes a day, essentially.
Yeah.
And if you get like a couple on in the show that day, it's like, oh, good job.
It's crazy to like, when I first started, I was like asking people around the room, I was like, how many pages do you submit? And you told me, you were like, about 6. And I remember being like, I have to write 6 pages of jokes?
In what font?
Size 24. We write in cookie font.
Yeah. In Wingdings. But then you realize a success rate is like only 98% of your jokes didn't make it in. It's like pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a question. Did you have any sketches or jokes that you felt particularly sad to see cut?
Yes.
Every day.
I'll tell you one sketch that we got to do recently was when Seth walks into the writer's room and says that we're having our weekly pitch meeting, and I was under the impression that we were doing book reports, not mm-hmm. pitches. And that aired in a show in the middle of January. I wrote it in June of the year before, mm-hmm. but like not remotely topical. So it's like clearly the easiest one to push. I remember like one time we were like doing something with Michelle Obama that was like supposed to be, it was my scheduled shoot day, and it's like, well, fuck yes. Okay, I guess we'll do Michelle Obama instead of my sketch. Like, you can't argue with that. And then we scheduled it for another day, and there was Forced Friends with Miley Cyrus, and it's like, yeah, okay, I guess Miley Cyrus' schedule is probably a little harder to work around than mine is, so we'll push it again. And just like, there's so much news. It was an election year. There was just like, it was always the easiest thing to push that I was like, well, eventually it's just going to get cut or something. And then January is like, oh, we scheduled it and there's nothing going on. We can do it. It's probably, I don't know if it's even like my favorite sketch I've ever done, but just like that it saw the light of day after I'd written it 8 months prior or something felt really good.
Let the record state that I asked him about a cut sketch and he is so successful that he got the sketch on anyway.
I haven't had a cut sketch, but I've had one that I've waited a while for.
You're like, I had a friend who got a sketch cut once.
We opened talking about the most recent sketch we wrote together that was
Well, what comes to mind for me is the sketch that got cut today. it was the third time we've tried it in rehearsal, and I'll be damned if the rehearsal audience just does not think I am funny.
I watched it in rehearsal today and it was really good.
It's tough because for listeners at home, we have a rehearsal audience that we test material on at 4:15, and they are people we just gather from around 30 Rock who are like tourists. And I want to say the breakdown's about 40% people from Norway, 30% people from the Amsterdam area.
Who we should say we're really grateful come to rehearsal.
20% Canadians, and then 10% of Midwesterner Americans, I think.
I will say, though, you did that today, and I think that's like the third time I've seen it. Like, it doesn't get cut. It keeps getting reworked and brought back.
Yeah,
so similar story to the one I told, Allie. It just means you'll get to do it in January.
Oh, that was January of 2018. Yeah. I can't wait. I'm sure it'll still be relevant then.
What is your favorite part of the week? Because mine is Thursdays when we have sketch read.
Oh, I thought you said Thursdays when we leave for the weekend. sketch read's very fun. I remember there was this one sketch read, and I don't even remember what we were talking about, but we all were laughing so hard, like bawling, crying for like 5 minutes, and I don't even remember what the
Sounds
bit
like
was.
One of mine.
It was we were reading your sketch that got pushed. That's what it was.
to explain to people listening what sketch read is. We were constantly pitching topical stuff, obviously, because it's a daily show. But on Thursdays, we have a sketch read where we just bring in stuff on spec, meaning like nobody has asked for this sketch. It's not something we've pitched before. Doesn't have to be topical, like that book report sketch. You just like kind of bring in whatever you want. And it's so fun because, you know, when you pitch something and you get told to write it up, it takes a little bit of the joke away because you know that sketch is coming. Like, I heard Ali's pitch, so I know what the sketch is about. And Sketch Read on Thursday, it's like, I have no idea what this is. Mm-hmm. So it always gets the best laugh because it's always a surprise to people.
Yeah.
That even, like, if your sketch doesn't go great, it's still, like, my favorite part of the week.
It's also really fun because a lot of people just write sketches as sort of room bits. Like, you know, just to make the other writers and Seth laugh or drive, you know, our head writer Alex Bates crazy. but it's a really fun, like, bonding time. And
also a lot are born out of room bits, like you and Amber.
Yes, actually.
I love.
Yeah, Amber and I do a bit called Point Counterpoint that, you know, I'm all doom and gloom about Trump, and then she's all like, so what, eat cake, you know, which is very much our personalities.
It was born out of like an actual
we would just have the, after Trump was elected, I would just turn around to the room and just like go on a rant about how we're all gonna die, and then Amber would be like, so what?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I never thought of it like that.
I was like, I didn't look at it like that. Thanks, Amber. So we turned that into a sketch, which that happens a lot. Jokes that kind of becoming a running bit in the room, we're just like, this is a sketch.
Say that again.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. All right. Well, we're being told to wrap it up, but this was really fun.
Yeah. This has been fun.
Oh, this is part scripted. This has been fun. Thank you for chatting with me, Allie.
Yes, you too, Mike. And thanks for listening, everyone. This has been Late Night Chats with Allie and Mike.
Bye, guys.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.